So welcome, and so today, as I said, we will do the Bohmian mechanics, the so-called Bohmian mechanics, which is an interpretation of quantum mechanics in which the trajectories are real. So there are trajectories in quantum mechanics, there are no waves or whatever, particles are associated to trajectories which move in space. And of course, in order to make sense of what we see, it is like that we do not know which trajectories the particle has chosen, but the particle has chosen only one trajectory, and not, so it's not a wave with, is that it is in more spaces at the same time, it is only and always in a certain given place. The problem is that simply we do not know where exactly, but the particle is in a place. In order to see that, how these Bohmian mechanics arise, it is also good to start from classical mechanics. And indeed, sometimes it's not only called Bohm, but also de Broglie Bohm. Because de Broglie already before came to this idea by looking at the equation of quantum mechanics and see that he could define trajectories. So sometimes it's called de Broglie Bohm, but Bohm then in the 50s took it over and independently developed again this approach and showed that it is perfectly consistent with QM without the need of then having the collapse of the wave function of something of the type. So in order to show where it comes from, first I will recall some very basic things of classical mechanics. The reason is that I need one particular equation, which is called the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. The fact why I need this Hamilton-Jacobi equation, which is purely classical mechanics, there is nothing like quantum, is that then when you start from QM in the way as de Broglie and Bohm did, you get an equation which is very similar to the Hamilton-Jacobi plus one term which is, so to say, the effect of H-bar, so of the quantum world on the particles. But the starting point is really to go back to classical mechanics. And let's say from a Lagrangian that I take as a function of x and x point, so no explicit time dependence, only one particle, we do it very easy. Anyhow, it is known how to generalize, there is no problem with that. So kinetic energy minus potential energy. So what we usually do is to write action which is a functional of the trajectories in such a way, T1, T2, dTl, x point. So what does it mean? It means that we fix here the boundary condition. So I should say it with xt1 a certain x1 and xt2 a certain given and fixed x2. And this is a function null because I can choose whatever function in between and vary it. T, I start from T1 at a certain position T1, I end in T2 at a certain position X2, and then this S is a functional because I can put whatever in between which links this the initial and the final point. And I do not repeat now the derivation, it's something that it has been done in classical mechanics, and probably if you have already done the path integral approach in quantum mechanics as well, if you take the derivation delta S equal to zero, only one trajectory is picked out, and this is the trajectory which minimizes the action and fulfills the equation of motion. So if you do the variation, it is just an integration and integration by part, you get the usual equation of motion. By the way, here the only point is that the equation of motion is not fixed by initial position and initial velocity, is fixed by initial position and end position. But of course, there are two conditions, there is no difference. Still, you have a unique outcome. The fact why I recall this, that actually I will do something a bit different. I will need the action, but the action in the Hamilton-Jacobi equation is different. It's not a functional of x. It's not a functional of the trajectory. It is something different. Still, I start from what we usually use in classical mechanics, so seeing the action as a functional. Then, of course, one could also define the Hamilton operator, the Hamilton non-operator function, which is px point minus L. Again, here one has to go, in this case, if I write everything as function of p and x point, the equation p dL the x point fix x point as a function of x and p. So I can rewrite everything as a function of x and p, as it is known. Actually, if I go to the so-called Hamilton equation, there is also a formal way to go to quantum mechanics. X h Poisson. This is a Poisson parentheses, and the second one would be this one. PH Poisson. When I go to quantum mechanics, actually I have that everything becomes an operator, and instead of the Poisson parentheses, I have the parentheses, the commutation between operators, and you have something like that, and the same for the other one. So again, also in this case, we have some, we can define a Hamilton operator that I will need in a second, an Hamilton function that then becomes an operator in quantum mechanics, and from the Hamilton equations, you can get in a formal wave quantum mechanics. If it's formal because you substitute some objects which are derivative with some operators, but still it works pretty well. Actually, connected to all these things, there is also the idea of path integral that I have to mention at this level, which is, in a way, related to also to having many trajectories, is that when you have the probability, and here I go to quantum mechanics then, that a particle move from x1 to x2, the probability amplitude that this transition from x1 and x2 takes place is the sum over all trajectories with given boundary condition, times the e at the power of I s, where this is the action as a functional divided h bar. So the important point is that in quantum mechanics, one doesn't have only one trajectory, but one has really to sum over all of them. So there's not only one, there are, and actually all trajectories have the same weight in the sense that e I s as modulus 1. So it's not that this trajectory, which is the classical one, has a different weight than some very crazy trajectories which will never take place classically. They have all the same modulus, which is 1, by the way. The question is, why then this 1 only survives? This has to do with the fact that when you are away from the minimum, you will have a trajectory, and a very trajectory close to it, whose basically, his action is something like, so if you have a certain, let's take this trajectory as this one, you have the trajectory S1, then you can have a trajectory very close to it, which is S1 plus I pi H bar. And then the sum of the trajectory 1 and the trajectory 2 goes to 0. Because suppose that you have EIS1, this is the contribution of 1. Then you have very close to it, there will be the contribution of 2. But this is IS1, I pi in the exponent, this is minus 1, and this is 0. Yeah, so the point is that, I will not repeat here the math, but which is actually not clear because these are highly fluctuating, these are fluctuating functions and so on. Only for the minimum of the action, you have, so to say, some set of trajectories which contribute coherently and don't cancel each other. But when you go away from the minimum, for each trajectory, there is a nearby trajectories which actually cancel that one. So it's not that these other trajectories don't contribute, it is that they cancel with others and the one to the minimum stays. So this is actually why from this setup, from this path integral, we recover the principle of least action. Put in a, because otherwise what in classical mechanics is, so to say, a postulate, in quantum mechanics, it becomes, in a sense, understandable, which is the fact that h bar should be a small number. Of course, this is the limit in which h bar is very small. Then these two trajectories should be very, very close, and so on. But this is, again, not yet my Bohmian mechanics. This is just a recall of how we do the action, how we go then from we define Hamilton, and we go to operators and the Heisenberg equations, and actually how this action and the minimal, the principle of minimizing the action is related to the path integral. But now, when we go to the Hamilton-Jacobi equation that is needed for this Bohmian mechanics, we have to do something which is slightly different, and it is to reinterpret the action in a different way. And this is the following. Let me consider the action as a function of t and some xe. And now you have to be careful. This was a functional. This was a functional, whatever function. This is not a functional. This is a function. I mean, if you put two numbers, you get a number. So this is different. And this is the integral from 0 to t. I fix the initial point, so I start at 0. And I also fix the initial position, even if I don't say it here. Now I will tell it better. And then I have a certain trajectory here, but this is not a arbitrary trajectory. This is the trajectory that fulfills the equation of motion. It's not a trajectory that you take whatever you want. This is the trajectory that starts at t equals 0 at a certain xe that, let's put it to 0, x initial equal to 0, we fix it. Wait, this is t equals 0, xe to 0 from the side, and this there will be some final point that I can move. So there will be a trajectory which minimizes the action, and this is the trajectory that you should take. If you change the final position, so you change this xe, you go for instance here, then you recalculate the action by changing the trajectory. And the trajectory that you use is the one that now fulfills the equation of motion. So you take only one trajectory, the one that fulfills the equation of motion, and you change the endpoint. And then this action is not a functional, it is a function. It's a function of the endpoint. Now, one can consider, so to say, a small displacement, delta xe, which you just change a bit the endpoint. Then you also do a kind of variation of this function, not of the functional. 0 t de tau. Del x delta xe Then the x point, delta x point, and this is equal to 0 t, the tau. I can use the equation of motion, d the tau, the L, the x point delta x plus the L the x point, the tau delta x. I can then rewrite it as the integral 0 tau the tau the L the x point delta xc. So I just take the derivative out and then through the chain rule this is the same. And this is actually p. Now you can do the integration. This is just p delta xe. So this is p of t. So actually you come that if you write the action in this particular form, the momentum at the very last time t, which is our end time, is the derivative of the action divided xe at the end point. So this is an equation of classical mechanics written by starting from the action written in this form. So this is the first trick, is just to change xe and then one gets this equation. The other possibility is to change t a bit. So you change delta t and you go to another point in which you fix xe, but again, you should take another trajectory because you should take the trajectory that fulfills the equation of motion for this new end point, so for the new time. So this is delta t, so this, if this is t plus delta t. And for the same xe. It is subtle. This is classical mechanics, but it is a very subtle thing. Then one does the very same stuff. And I mean, you should take into account that now the trajectory is, of course, different. There is also, in this case, a new trajectory. And one calculates the variation for this particular type, delta s. And of course, in that case, if you derive with respect to t, one piece is easy because the t is there. So this will be L delta t. So this is simple. Plus there will be a second piece with 0 t, del xc delta xc. The tau, in which again we do the variation because we change the trajectories from one to the other. And this is L delta t plus p delta x e. And we have to take into account that the new trajectory, delta x e, because we changed it, the trajectory is actually given by minus x point e t delta t. So these are, again, classical equations, but which in the end bring us to this Hamilton-Jacobi equation, which is the following. So which is actually here, L dt plus p delta x. This can be written because of this variation as L delta t minus p x point delta t. So it means, in the end, that L minus p x point is equal to the s over the t. Putting it all together, this is just the Hamiltonian. If you remember, p x point minus L is the Hamiltonian. So you get the s over the t plus Hamilton function, which is function of x, and p being given by the s divided the x. So I just rename it, instead of xc, I use x. This is zero. This is the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So again, the important point here is that the s is not a functional, it's a function of the endpoint. It's a function of the endpoint of the trajectories, and the trajectory that we take is the solution of the equation of motion. We don't vary, we already take that one. So the first time that actually I saw that function, I was surprised in the sense that I don't understand this equation, because I was expecting to see a functional. And this is now related to a particular, actually to the phase of the wave function, which is a function, which is not a functional. So the point, in order to make sense of that, one is really to carefully look how it is, and then this is derivation of the classical equation that I did pretty fast and so on. One can do it in classical mechanics and so on. But this is the equation that one finally has. And this is what we need. We need this Hamilton equation, which is just a rewriting of the classical equation of motion. Okay, so the question might be, exactly, okay, I say it a bit, but what is the relation to quantum mechanics? This is no quantum mechanics at all, this is classical physics. In order to go to quantum mechanics, we go back to the Schrödinger equation. And we do something that basically could be an exercise, a good exercise for the course of quantum mechanics, which actually, among the other things, leads also to the continuity equation that we discussed the very first day, so the very fact that the probability is conserved. The probability is a conserved quantity because the wave function can move, can change in time, but the area is always one, so the particle is somewhere. And so how does it go? One does something which is pretty simple. We write down the equation, the Schrödinger equation. I do it for only one-dimensional case, but of course this can be easily generalized. Psi, and psi is a function, of course, of t and x. But what I do is I rewrite this function in polar coordinates, so to say. And these r and s, these are important, are real. Real functions. You can always write a complex number in this form, with two real functions here. Here, one should be careful for another point of view. There is a so-called important approximation in quantum mechanics called VKB, where one starts for something very similar, but like that, with r is one. But then you should be careful, because s is that complex. You can also write a complex number as ei, another complex number. But then it is something different. In this case, both functions are real. And the fact that I used here, the name s there, is not by chance. Is that now, for this phase, we will get an equation which will look very similar to this one. And this is what brought De Broglie first and Bohm later to say, come on, maybe this is a classical equation, just that we have some slight modification of it due to the new constant h bar. So this was the... So the origin is pretty simple. Now one could do the following exercise with students and says, plug it in and derive equation for r and s. So for the two independent functions, for both real function r and s. Well, this is a bit of calculation. So the student would probably start like this, e h bar D-T-R-E-I-S H-bar plus R-E D-T-S H-bar. And then there is the second derivative. This is a bit of more work. I just write the final result, but this is just calculation. Two I the XR, the XS minus R the XS squared divided H bar squared. This is also be a good exercise not to do errors by deriving and so on. But you understand this is something, so to say, straightforward. It's just some. And I forgot one piece, which of course is the potential. So these, the different terms comes when you do the second derivative on that. Then you get all these terms, you put them in, and then you, one can do the following, eliminate this exponential, which comes everywhere in all the terms, so you can throw it away. And you can get two different equations, one for the real part and one for the imaginary part. So which look? Minus h bar m dxr dxs that would be the imaginary part equation, and then if I didn't do any mistake, which is always possible, there is a second equation which comes from the real part. To M R plus V R. So these are the two equations that one gets. Okay, up to now this is just mathematics. The first one can be rewritten in a way that looks already a bit familiar. R squared the xs 0, and this is the continuity equation for R squared, and this is actually rho. This is the, if you take rho as psi squared, this is just R squared. This is the probability density. This is the equation of the probability density. This is basically the continuity equation that comes in. And this, together with this piece, will be the current, J, that in this one-dimensional case, there is just one current. It's just in one direction because there is only one direction. But the second is even more interesting because one can write, you see, there is dts, and if you recall here, there is also a derivative of this s with respect to t. But look, we started from completely different things. We started from the action in quantum mechanics, and here we have the phase of the wave function, so the action in classical physics, and here we have the phase of the wave function in quantum mechanics. So completely different objects. But this one can be rewritten as dTs plus 1 over 2m dxs squared plus v plus q, and now I say, what is this q? And this q, just being identified, is that the second term is minus h bar squared divided 2m, 1 over r, dx squared r. If you could neglect this q, you get the equation of Hamilton-Jacobi. It's exactly the same equation that you had in classical physics. this Q is additional effect due to the fact that there is h bar is non-zero, because in all the other term h bar cancelled. So I recovered something like quantum mechanics with, of course, remember that dxs is p. This is what we had before. P is equal to s over dx. So everything fits exactly. So this is exactly the Hamilton-Jacob equation, because apart from Q, which is the new thing, so this is really H. So if you identify S with it, you get exactly the equation of classical mechanics with one exception, this Q. So one also called this Q as the quantum potential, and the new potential is the old classical potential plus the effect of the quantum potential that gets in. And you have, so the new potential is then the sum of two pieces, what you had even before, plus the effect of the quantum world on that. And if I go back to the very first equation, then I also see that this is something like dt r squared plus dx r squared, and then there is dxx divided m. This is just p, the momentum, equals zero. So this is, again, this current j. So why is this important? Because I recover the continuity equation. So this one is what we usually, you know, when the students, they do this exercise, they actually do something completely different. They don't do the split. They multiply, they consider the conjugate equation, they multiply this by psi star, and they conjugate by psi, and then they subtract, and then they get exactly the first equation. You could do the very same game by, instead of subtracting, of summing, and then you will get the other equation that De Broglie and Bohm already derived before. So, of course, in three dimension, you have something of this type. Rho V equals zero, where V is gradient S divided M, and this gradient S, of course, is P divided M. So they said this V here, this gradient S divided M, so you take this function, you take the derivative, this is really the velocity of particle. This is the velocity. So it is not, you have really trajectories, and the fact that rho, the continuity equation, of course, assures, as I say in a moment, that everything is consistent. Now the question is, but which, here I have not only one velocity at a certain time, I have many velocities, which one? So which is the velocity of the particle? Because you see here for, so this is, S is a function of T and X. You fix a T and you take a X and you don't know where the particle is. There are many possible velocity of the particle. You should know which one to take. And this is what we discuss now. But the first point, so where they become somehow interested in the problem, is that you get an equation which is classical mechanics, apart from this Q, this quantum potential, which of course should explain the dynamics that you have in quantum mechanics that is different. And so the first thing that I do is now to do a picture of the double slit experiment. And I also have in a second line some videos for that, that were prepared in the framework of this seminar with a simulation how the trajectories and so on looks like. So the question is, so which trajectories? But first, before discussing that, let's look how Bohm then interpret the double slit experiment. So the trajectories in Bohm, in Bohmian mechanics, are something of this type. Let me write what we have in quantum mechanics is something of this type, yeah, some intensity. So here we have the trajectory of Bohmian mechanics as something of this type. Here it goes like this. Here there are some trajectory going here. Then there is some other trajectory going here. From here down there is the trajectory going here. I find it later, we will see that. Then there will be a trajectory going here and so on. So this is how it looks like. Why don't they go straight? This is the effect of this Q, of this quantum potential. You see there is no trajectory which ends up here where the particle is not seen because of destructive interference. All the trajectories end up basically where we see the particle, so where we have the maximum, basically. Of course, so the density of trajectory is larger when the maximum is zero here, and then it becomes larger in here, so when we have maxima and absolutely zero where we have minima and destructive interference. Now, the idea of Bohm is that the particle is on one of these trajectories, maybe this one. Takes only one. It's simply that we do not know which one. But these are real trajectories. So it's not that the trajectories are something metaphysical, are physical. And the particle only takes one of them, and for instance reaches this point here. The fact is that we do not know which one. By the way, the answer to that, so if the particle went through slit, number one or slit number two can be directly answered by looking where the particle is, where is the hit, where is the spot on the screen. If it is here down, it means that it is hole number two. If it is from here up, it means that it is hole number one. And the trajectories never cross each other. They never cross each other because, I mean, if you would cross each other, since P is the S over the X, if the trajectory would cross each other, you would have two momenta at the same point, which is not possible. So there is no crossing of these trajectories. Still, what it is not answered here is why this one and not this one, for instance. This is an effect of ignorance that we have on the system. So it is not an intrinsic random. It is the fact that we do not know where we start from. If we had known that actually the original trajectory was this, that the particle was here, we could have said that it would hit there. The point is that we do not know exactly where it starts from, and we have to assume, and this is the, so to say, this statistical equilibrium, we have to assume that the time t equals zero, let's say, the probability distribution where the particle is c is zero x squared. So exactly, so this function r squared zero x. If we assume that originally this is our ignorance on the system, then this ignorance, because of the continuity equation, exactly evolves with that equation. So it means that later on it will be like here. So if you do not know where the particle is at the beginning and the probability distribution is given by this, then when you reach the screen, you will have that the probability distribution is given by that. But it's a probability which is not intrinsic. You actually have one trajectory and only one hit, and everything was deterministic. So, let me put it in this way. So this is the initial ignorance in the sense that it is the distribution of probability of the initial position. But once you have that, everything is absolutely fine. Let me see. So how does it look like? So I would like to make some plots, some other example. Of course, then there was a lot of debate that arose out of this interpretation, because one of the first criticisms that we can move is exactly the one linked to the fact, why should we have this initial distribution of probability? Okay, once you have it, once you start with rho, then it is true that it is kept at each time in the future and at each time in the past. But why should you have that? Why should we have that? This is an unanswered question. So why the distribution probability of our ignorance should exactly coincide with that quantity? This is absolutely unanswered. Once you have that, then it's true, it is kept. But you do not, it is an assumption in the framework of the Bohm approach. So, but okay, once you have that, you have also that this is true also later on. Okay, this we do it in a second. So, just some example. Suppose that I start from R0x, it is something of this type. And this is our initial ignorance on the system. The particle will be somewhere. For instance, could be at a certain, could be here. It's simply that we do not know where it is. Now let's take the function a bit later. We could see, for instance, that the wave packet moved to the right. So if we know where is this, we could exactly predict where the particle ends. But if we do not know, so for each initial position, there is one trajectory. It's simply that we do not know which is the initial position. Of course, this is a kind of moving of wave packet, it is rather easy, but we could have also spreading of wave packets that by the way, I didn't mention it, but the spreading of wave packets is also a kind of problem of quantum mechanics yet. If you start with a wave packet which is localized in space, then this wave packet spreads. And so if in a sense this wave probability was localized around a certain time, a certain space, you wait long enough and then it simply goes to very far in all directions. So this is a property of quantum mechanics. Actually, the waves that don't lose their shape are basically could be electromagnetic waves. But if you take other waves and so on, they spread.
Why is this a problem?
No, it is a problem because it means that then each electron is everywhere if you wait long enough. I mean, the wave function of the electron goes everywhere.
But isn't the same with Brian motion of pollen in water? After some time, you
would like to have an electron, you know, as a point-like object. If it is a wave packet, if you would like to have a wave interpretation of the photon, you would like that the electron, you would like that the wave packet doesn't spread. But yeah, in principle, this is a feature of quantum mechanics. It's not a problem in itself. It's a problem if you try to interpret it. But yeah, this is a feature.
But yes, even ordinary waves.
Of course.
If you drop a stone in a bucket of water, the wave will then it will spread everywhere.
This is a property of waves, unless you have some electromagnetic waves which they don't distort, or if you have some soliton. Soliton also don't lose their shape. That could be something interesting, by the way. The solitonic wave don't spread. By the way, in order to avoid the spreading, the other possibility is to have localization of the wave packets. This is on done later on. So, but if you have a spreading, then you would have, for instance, something like this. You do not know where you start, but then this would move here. So you start at this x1 and you reach this trajectory goes from x1 to x2. So this is at time 0, this would be at some later time tau. You could have also some more interesting configuration where you have a splitting. So we start at 0x with some wave packet here, and we could end up at tau x with two wave packets. This is again following quantum mechanics. This is psi squared. This is the wave. This is R squared. This is the wave function. Actually, I should better write, I mean, I can always take it positive, but I think it is even better to write R squared instead of, so this is the wave function squared. So this is always real and so on. So in this case, I have one wave packet, which then moves to two. So if we start here, it goes here. If we start here, we go here. Simply that we do not know where we start. But the particle, the electron, is not here and here at the same time, is either here or here. Simply that you don't know where you start from. So if you see from the other direction, it seems that we start from here, something like this, and then the trajectory goes. Here we have one, and here we have the other. This is the time. And so this is also the understanding of the how it is the solution of the Schrödinger cat. The Schrödinger cat is either dead or alive, because this is one trajectory. This is one trajectory. I'm not dead and alive, because here there are two wave packets. The wave function is two wave packets, but the trajectory is only one. So the electron is not here and there. The same is for the cat. So these are also two worlds. But in that very same sense, the atoms of the cat are not split into a superposition, are either there or there. It is our ignorance that tells us that we do not know where the cat is. So in this sense, the important point in this interpretation given by Bohm is that what counts are the positions. So particles have always positions, driven by our ignorance that we do not know where we start with these positions, but these are positions. And I mean, everything is consistent in a sense, apart from the problem that we already said, that, I mean, quantum field theory, it is very difficult to, in a sense, reconcile. There are some approach of different type, but this is, it is difficult because in quantum field theory we have creation and annihilation of particles. So how to interpret that? It is, there were different approaches by distinguishing boson and fermions and so on. So to have either one different, having fermions would have positions and boson would be fields. So you still want to start to, maybe it sounds a bit like epicycles when you go to QFT. That, in this case it is nice, with some, of course, elements of discussion, which is why should I start with that, and why this quantum potential should depend on this ignorance, because this quantum potential is, again, I write it here, this quantum potential that generates these trajectories and is all the difference from the classical model depend not only on the action, depend on this real part, on this modulus of this wave function. So it is on this function R, and so which at the beginning is our ignorance. So why this initial ignorance should affect then the motion of the particle? This is, to me, very difficult to understand also. But once you assume that, then it stays all the time. By the way, there are very interesting consequences of this, of the Bohmian mechanics, one of which is that if you take the hydrogen atom, the electron doesn't move. There is no movement of the electron. It is very easy to see, because if you take the wave function of the hydrogen atom, this is given by some function that depends only actually on R modulus. Let me take the ground state. Because otherwise it's not only function of, I mean, if you don't, if you're not the ground state, it's not an S wave, you also function, of course, depends also on theta and phi. But if you take the ground state, it depends only on that for L equals zero. Actually, in general, for L equals zero, you have this. But then this velocity, which is gradient of S divided M, is zero. You can see, because here S, okay, you can put H bar here, s is minus at 0 t. There is no time, no x dependence. If you take the derivative, you reset to position, you get 0. So there is no movement. Yes?
But I mean, if you experimentally test it, it's at different places. Does it mean every time you measure it moves?
No. So the point is that the probability that it is somewhere, this is given by the Schrödinger equation still, because this is our initial ignorance. Simply that it's not that what we have this usual idea that it moves around. This is of course wrong because of classical reason.
Yeah.
We have the idea that it is a kind of wave, that as long as we don't measure, actually it fits, right? Because it's a static wave which is around the proton, and that fits. But here we have something different, because we don't have a wave. We have the proton here and the electron either here or here, we do not know, but somewhere, like this.
But we can measure where it is, right?
Yeah, but the point is that which is the outcome? Once you will find this.
So every time you measure afterwards, it changes position, basically.
No, but even if you measure it here, okay, you say, okay, it was there.
Okay.
But then you do the second measurement on a second proton, on a second hydrogen atom, okay, it was here. If you do the distribution, it is just a distribution of...
But the same one, it will still appear at different positions, right?
No, you mean after you measured, okay, yeah. But you do the measurement, you have a kind of collapse, now I say, I mean, how do we understand that?
So it's a bit like whack-a-mole, every time
yeah.
I get the electron, it pops up somewhere else.
Yes, okay. Of course. When you then touch it, this is different.
Okay, now that's...
But the interesting point that actually this is true for any real wave function, so to say, or when the phase, or you see here, the phase does not depend, it depends only on t, then you always have something like that the particle doesn't move in the Bohmian mechanics. Because if you take the derivative of s with respect to space variables, you get zero. So it is a completely different view of the hydrogen atom. If you take the... another orbital, for instance, with L equal 1, then you have a movement. Then you have a movement, indeed.
What happens in Bohmian mechanics if I measure?
If I measure, now you say. Yeah,
it
then
changes position, but I mean, that means does it instantly appear somewhere else? That doesn't seem good. If it moves somewhere else, it has to in between have a momentum and then lose that?
I should take into account, of course, the... also the atoms of the measuring apparatus.
Okay.
That they are also in a definite position.
Yes.
I come in a second because I have it here. First I wanted just to tell what if we take another so H atom L equal 1. So if we take for instance another wave function of the electron into the atom. Let's take, for instance, it's 2, 1, 1. Remember, this is n, l, m. And this is a phi n, l, depending on r. Then there is some polynomials that depend to be 2, 1 on theta. And then there is, let's take this one, I phi. And then there is and the phi is this angle. So actually, if now you take the action s, so this is just an example of what we have. We would have this phi there, minus this piece that actually we will not play any role. But this is h bar arc tan y divided x minus e2 t. E2 is the energy of the orbital number 2. This is minus E0 divided 4, this is this 13 electron volt, the usual stuff for the hydrogen atom. And this is n squared, so 2 with the power of 2. But this plays no role because if I take derivative with respect to x, I get 0 anyhow. But here, so what do we get in this case? If you calculate Vy, this is 1 over m, ds divided the y. This is a bit of calculation to get, that you get h bar m x squared plus y squared. If you take vx, 1 over m this is minus h bar m. This is just after you do the derivative, you will get something like this. And vz is of course zero because there is no xy here there. So it means that if you look at it in the xy plane, it's really going around in this case. So this is the velocity profile that you get. So in that case, if you don't take the ground state, for the ground state it doesn't move. For the, if you have some m, some LZ non-zero, the third component of the angular momentum, then you get some movement going, which is somehow also nice, so to say, too. It would really move. But now, the question back to the...
But this velocity is not defined in the center.
Is not?
Defined in the center.
Right, but you have no, the probability that the electron is there is anyhow
going
to zero. Yeah, because of the... Now, the wave function itself is non-zero. Actually, it's large, but then the wave function, you know, you have to take the element of the volume close to zero, and that goes to zero. I think before doing a break, I still discuss the measurements. Yeah, this is the measurement in that. Then we do a break. Then I show you on the laptop, I have some beautiful simulation, as I said, that I think it is worth to show about this Bohmian trajectory. So what we had there, but a bit better to visualize. And but before, so the again, so in this particular case, we have this, so the actually the Schrödinger equation is still perfectly valid in the Bohmian mechanics. This is still there. So the Schrödinger equation can also split. It's simply that there are, in addition, there are trajectories which go also either there or there. But it's not that the Schrödinger equation is not valid. The Schrödinger equation is part of the Bohmian mechanics, simply that Bohmian mechanics add the trajectories on top. But it is still perfectly valid. You don't throw anything away of what you have, what you had before. So for this sense, in this sense, the, actually one can show that because of this, the Bohmian mechanics can perfectly describe these Bell inequalities and so on. But it is non-local. It's not an example of local theories like the one with the clock, with the, this function L and R as function of theta that we had yesterday in the example, so that the photons already know what it will do when it hits a polarizer. If it goes through or not, it doesn't independence of the angle. It already has a function of the angle. It knows what it will do. No, it is not like that. Bohmian mechanics can describe that because it is non-local. This non-locality allows to, so to say, pass the test of Bell, so it doesn't fulfill the Bell inequalities. The Bell inequalities are classical.
Quantum potential is
non-local. Yeah, because of that, yes. Because this quantum potential depends on the wave function, which is everywhere, basically. And actually, when you take more particles, you can see even more explicitly, when you don't have only one, but you have more. And there was this idea that it's basically like a radio wave. This was also an idea given by Bell itself and by Healey, that say that it is like having a radio wave and then a ship following one of the possible trajectories that the radio is telling. So the ship is always in a definite place, but then you have some different radio waves which can be in other places, but the ship is only there. So the ship is somehow bringing the ship, is following this radio wave, but of course, this radio wave is much larger, but the ship is only in one position. But again, so what about the measurement? Let's start the following again. Let's take our, this is y, and this is the wave function of our electron that hits the screen over interference pattern, so it will be something like that. Suppose that the particle is here, okay? Because in Bohmian mechanics, this is not the full knowledge of the system. The particle is somewhere. Of course, it cannot be here. It can be here with some probability. Most probably it will be here, but let's assume it's there. So what about possible detector. The detector position, actually, in this case, the detector is the screen itself, right? But let's assume the detector is a kind of big arrow. At the beginning, it would be like that. But then the detector also splits in all possible, I mean, the wave function of the detector, as we had always before, also splits in all possibilities. Yeah, it also splits in all possibilities because it can either show here, either here, either here, the wave function. But the particles of the detectors also follow some Bohmian trajectory, so they are in one position, and of course that must be considered, it should be that one. So basically, we can also imagine ourselves, our atoms are then looking the screen and looking the points in a particular position. So once we have seen that, so it is clear that for the future evolution, we will have a kind of collapse of the wave function. So the wave function later on will be reduced by that, then it will evolve again. So our once we have seen that, of course, we know that the electron was there and its wave function is so to say, changed effectively by the fact that also the atoms of the detector have chosen exactly that way, because there is only one trajectory and one branches. But the fact, and again, of course, the coherence is important. All the other stuff, all the other branches, these empty waves are called. These empty waves. So the waves of the wave, part of the wave function, where the particle isn't inside, they are always there. So these empty waves will never disappear. It's simply that because of the coherence, will play no role in the future evolution. And the other point is that, actually, I mean, if you go to Everett, the many words, it is very similar to what it is here. The many words interpretation is the very same stuff without choosing a point, but keeping only the wave. That is what we will say then later. So this is, but still all these waves, also in Bohmian mechanics, are there. Simply that you say is that the waves are not real. This is just a mathematical entity. What it counts is only the points where the particle is.
But in which sense they are not really, they give the...
It is like the Hamilton, they say it is like the Hamilton equation, or like the Lagrangian. I mean, for me, I agree, if I accept that the particle is real, I also assign some form of reality also to the wave function. But this is actually what it counts is only the position is a real things that you can see. It's only where the particles are.
Well, that would mean it's a direct observable.
But you cannot observe the, in the end you can only observe positions. So in the Bohmian mechanics, the only thing you can see are only positions. So in the end you have pointers, you have positions, no matter what. Even if you measure the momentum, you measure the positions on some pointer. You always measure positions. So the ontological entities important for the Bohmian mechanics are positions. That's it. Nothing else counts. Okay. Let's do like that. We do a short break. We meet in 15 minutes for this. I try to set up the computer in the meantime.